Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's Cairo Knights, Mason, Mike, and Stacy. How about that?
Hello.
Hi, Stace.
Here I am.
Here you are.
Hi.
Yes. It's the 9 o'clock hour, friends. 98973. You know the drill. State Roofing text line. Shoot us a text if you want to be a part of the conversation here tonight. Got a few things to talk about, but first, Seattle Sports at Night is powered by Star Rentals, the preferred supplier of the West's best contractors.
Safety's on, turn up the microphone. She's talking sports, so you're about to learn a ton.
Approximately 9 p.m.
She hangs out with Mike and me. And you know from the song that counts the time of Safety's on.
I really went for accuracy with that one, Stace.
Well, I think you went for covering a wide range of times. Look, it could be 8:50, it could be 9:05. I make no promises.
Right.
You'll listen to it and you'll like it. Yeah,
right.
Stop complaining. That's what you were. You were like the 90s parent. Go outside. Go for a walk. I don't care where you go. Go outside.
Yeah.
Run away for an hour.
Run away. Just get out. Just go away from me.
Just leave.
Just go.
You guys ever run away from home?
I
ran away from home when I was little.
I was literally going
like
to ask you that. Yeah, me too. Same thing.
Did they even know?
No. No, they did not. My mom to this day is probably... Well, you know what it was is I walked to the top of our hill. So there's like a highway, and then you turn right off the highway, and you go down this hill, and it's us. So I walked up the top of the hill, and I just stood kind of by the highway, and then I walked back down.
Yeah.
That's as far as I got.
Running away is boring.
I forget when it was over, but it's probably something.
How old were you?
Yeah. It's overrated. Oh, probably like... maybe like definitely elementary school. I put my stuff in a backpack and then it was summertime. I could have walked out the front door and no one would know, but I climbed out of my window.
Stop for just a second.
Yeah.
What did you put in your backpack?
Yes.
What was the stuff?
Oh, I don't remember. I'm sure I took some food and probably books. I was big into books. So you got to get some Harry Potter in there.
Yeah.
Maybe a coloring book.
You never had like a stuffed animal, anything, sort of good luck charm, anything like that?
I did. I have a blue bunny. Its name is Blue Bunny. So I probably took him with
Clever.
Me.
Clever.
You are a creative kid.
Clever.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I did
I'm
that.
Minimalist.
I did that once and I went to basically... I walked like 3 or 4 blocks away and then turned around. I was like, this sucks. And came back.
Yeah, running away is the worst.
And I was like, Mom, get... Like, I had to tell her what I had just done. And she didn't care. She's like, yeah.
No,
it's not. That's not a thing. What are you going to do? Like, as a parent now, looking... If I had a kid that was like me that did that, I'd just be like, what are you going to do out in the world? You're going to be consumed by jaguars or something.
Right.
Be careful with the... do you ever run away question, which is if you're sitting in a group of friends, you know, inevitably.
Right.
That doesn't always come up, but I've been in many places where it's come up. And I was with a group of friends back in California, and someone said at a table, I didn't know everyone really well at the table. And one person launched into, I did. And I got picked up by a car, and we're like, oh, what?
Oh, no. That's a real runaway.
No, and then had to flee the person that picked them up in the car.
Oh, no.
No, really.
Yeah.
Like, it was a whole event.
Did they jump out of a moving car?
I think they jumped out at a stoplight or something like that.
Whoa.
Yeah, and they realized this person was an incredible creep. It was, and again, it turned out fine, but they ended up like 4 miles from their house, panicked parents, like the whole, it became this thing of the, like this defining moment of a childhood.
My sister was pretty troubled as a youth.
Yeah.
And she would run away. She would disappear. And eventually she went to go to Atlanta to live with my dad. And because my parents are split up, Mom was in New Jersey. Dad was in Atlanta. My sister goes down there, decides she's going to run away and come back up to New Jersey and hitchhikes. She was like 15. And found this, like this trucker dude picked her up who, according to her, was like, I guess he was a dad, and he like felt bad and kind of knew what was up, so he helped her get back home.
So she did.
She did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you guys ever hear the story of Mary Vincent?
Oh, no. So that actually happened in my hometown.
What?
Yep.
Indeed. What's the story?
You're from Vegas, or was it in California?
No. She was picked up in Modesto, California. And
it's the most horrific survival story. Well, not the it's
one of the most.
She's
picked up by this guy, raped.
Lawrence Singleton.
Lawrence Singleton, as famous as a criminal as you get in my, well, not quite, but as famous as you get in my hometown. Wow. And he's in the top. And he takes her up to a place where we used to camp, Del Porto Canyon.
No.
Rapes her. We used to camp there all the time. Chops off her forearms.
What?
With a hatchet to kill
both
her.
Both of them.
Both of them.
Guys.
She staggers out, manages to get help from, I think it was a farmer out in the area, rancher. It's just ranch land and a canyon that is between, or a mountain range between, the coastal range between the Central Valley of California and San Jose, essentially. And so we used to go up there. You go up there shooting guns, riding dirt bikes, camping, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she ends up wandering out of there and gets picked up. And they ultimately, I don't remember how long it took them. That was the biggest fright story of my childhood.
Right, right, right.
It's odd that you bring that one up. It's horrific.
God.
How do you know about this?
I heard it on, it was on I Survived, and then I listened to this podcast called My Favorite Murder, and it sounds but it's not. But they talked about it as a survival story, and it was one of those ones where you're kind of listening to it in the background and then you just freeze. And it's actually, it's an even more insane survival story that it sounds when we're just talking about it. Cause you have to think, like, she's just had both of her hands cut off, arms cut off. And then she's essentially kind of pushed down the side of this,
right.
I don't want to say cliff, but like a ravine kind of thing. And he leaves her for dead. And she still manages to get up out of there and walk down until someone stops for her. And the entire time, like, she doesn't have anything to stop the bleeding. Well, I think she said, did she put dirt on it? Something like that, where she's, willed herself down there. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
That's incredible. What's her name?
Mary Vincent.
Mary Vincent.
Mary Vincent.
I think.
Wow, I've never heard that before.
Every time I start saying Mary, since I moved up here, it turns into Kay Letourneau immediately.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Uh-huh. Yeah, Mary Vincent. Yeah, it just literally was, gosh, I don't remember what year that happened. Probably 78, something like that.
Mm. My goodness.
Yeah, well, that's weird that you bring that one up. It's funny because I actually have not listened to any podcasts about it, but I did read all the stories when I was a kid, and I've read subsequent, you know, people when they've done retrospectives, but with podcasting and whatnot, going back and actually interviewing the people and the way you find out so much more about what actually happened that you didn't know just from sort of the very by the book newspaper account.
Yeah.
It makes me, I'm actually kind of curious about what you listen to.
My Favorite Murder is very popular. They came through into a live show at the Paramount, I think.
Oh, really?
Not too long ago. Yeah. Yeah. Back when live shows were a thing. Stace, I'm gonna change the topic a little bit. We're heading toward baseball.
We're doing a very sharp right turn.
But it's a very sharp right turn. But I noticed that you and the crew over at 710 ESPN have assigned a all you guys as a baseball team. The whole staff and crew over at 710, and everybody gets a position and a batting order. And I can't go through all of it because I. There are people who listen to Cairo who don't listen to 710, so they may not get everybody. But I wanted to talk about you, because if I remember...
Great, me too, all the time.
If I remember correctly, you are leading off? Are you the first batter?
I am. I'm the leadoff hitter, and I'm also the second base woman.
How do you... Yeah, that's right. How do you feel about your assigned position?
I'm honored. I think it recognizes my athletic ability. I'm not going to be your strongest hitter, but I'm certainly one of your quickest. I can get on base reliably. I'm a speedster, so I can help with the RBIs for some of the cleanup hitters. And I also had, so Tom Wassel, my co-host, is the one that made it. And the entire thing is this like spoof article where he has like bios, and mine is so all of them really? Are kind of funny, like tongue-in-cheek. Mine's the least mean. Paul's is pretty nice too. Paul is the shortstop and he's batting second behind me, but then we then he has like Dave Wyman, he has him as a DH, most likely to charge the mound when provoked. Danny O'Neill, third baseman and absolutely a maniac on social media. Jim Moore is the first baseman, desperately wishes to retire but can't due to the fact that he's lost most of his fortune in an ill-fated investment in a gold machine.
In a gold machine.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. If you guys want to see that, check that out. That's on 710 ESPN's social media. Or it sounds like Tom wrote something for 710sports.com.
He did. Yeah, okay. 710sports.com and then 710 ESPN Seattle on Twitter.
Fun. Let's talk about those minor leagues, huh? Because
okay.
and
let's do it.
I want to set up the story just a second, and then I have a question. It looks like minor leagues, while the Major League Baseball is going to go ahead with the 60-game season, it looks like the baseball's minor leagues are not, that there's not yes. going to be a season for them this year. Can you guys explain the relationship between the minor leagues and the major leagues? Like, what exactly is minor league baseball?
In the simplest terms, I think the way to look at it is the minor leagues are a series of different levels of teams. So like in the majors, so in the MLB, you're playing every other team. You're all kind of on the same level. The minor leagues actually encompasses multiple levels of play. So maybe you're a rookie and you work your way up to AAA, but like they have high A, they have double A.
Okay.
And it is essentially a team where a major league team can keep their players that are still developing. So unlike the NFL, where when you're a draft pick or rookie in the NFL, you compete to start right away. In baseball, you might spend 2, 3, 4, 5 years going through the minor leagues to get to the bigs. I mean, there are some guys that get there when they're exceptionally young, but they're usually like generational talents. And there are some guys, I would say, you know, it doesn't take too long. Like there are some players for the Mariners people have their eyes on that are moving pretty quickly through the system. But yeah, it's a developmental league. And then all of these teams are located all across the country. So, for instance, the Seattle Mariners have Tacoma Rainiers as one of their minor league teams. It's a AAA affiliate. But then they also have a team in Modesto, and then they have a team in Arkansas. And so there are individual little, not economies, but Mike, what's a better way to say, like, each of these is also its own business and
like a franchise,
employees, and brings in its own,
not really a franchise. It's an affiliation. So they switch. Modesto from my childhood until now has had the single A. It tends to be a single A club in Modesto. I think almost exclusively it has in its history was the Cincinnati Reds when I was a kid.
Huh.
For much of my middle life, it was the Oakland A's, which is only 70 miles away. So they would frequently rehab players down there, including one famous incident with Jose Canseco hitting like a 500-foot home run on one at-bat. That was his entire rehab assignment off some 19-year-old kid from San Bernardino. It was a lovely moment. And then it was the Brewers, I think, and then now the Mariners.
Huh.
But that's single A. So single A, so you also have, to Stacey's point, you also have sort of at the single A level, it tends to be really young kids, like 18 to 22.
19.
If you're a 25 year old in single A baseball, you're aging out pretty quickly. It's double A, a little bit more variation. Triple A, you actually have many former major leaguers who are either trying to work their way back into the club, rehabbing, or they're at that pivot point of whether they're on the downslide or whether they can still hang on just a little bit to get back in a major league club. But they have so these teams are not owned by Major League Baseball, but they're in part funded, these affiliation fees. So you're kind of playing for a championship, but you're really playing to develop people. So they will pluck your best player. If your best player is tearing it up and they need someone mid-season, they'll take away your best person you know, in the middle of your little championship run and move them. But that's what it's there for. I mean, you have to be excited for anyone getting called up to a major league club.
Sure. So what does not having minor leagues mean for this year's baseball season?
Good question.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a good question. It means a lot of things. And the unfortunate thing about it is, like many things that have been canceled or halted in the midst of a pandemic, it doesn't just affect the immediately obvious things like a major league team. It affects the employees that work there, maybe even like the kind of economy surrounding if it's in a small town. So so for something like, let's say we're looking at the Mariners. For the Mariners, there are some players that are their higher ranked prospects. So Julio Rodriguez is one of those guys. He would not have been promoted to the big leagues this year. He's only 19 years old. I think he's turning 20. He's got like at least a year still to go in the minors, even moving at a good pace. Like he was just a guy that the stage in his career is that he's still developing.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be on their taxi squad. So each team has, I think, a 40-player taxi squad this year.
What's that?
And that in part is going to be to like pull guys up in the case that guys land on the injured list with COVID.
Okay.
So if guys are quarantining or if players on a team are quarantining, this will be like your pool of players to take borrow
your,
from. Like
your
they're
understudies.
Gonna play separately. They'll play in Tacoma. Yeah, it's almost like if AAA Tacoma, which is the highest minor league level before the bigs, if they stayed, only it's not everyone from that team. So they've got some guys on that league, on that taxi squad that are going to be replenishing. So they're guys that, maybe they're like the third guy on a depth chart at right field or whatever. They want to keep him in case someone goes down with an injury or, God forbid, someone tests positive for COVID. But then there are guys that they're just keeping on that taxi squad to continue to develop. So there are ways that some teams are finding ways to work around this. Like, hey, let's take our best prospects and continue to work with them. They just won't be playing for a championship on whatever minor league team they were on, but we can still get our coaches around them. But there are many, 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 many more players who are not part of those taxi squads who are facing potentially a loss of, I think, a $400 a week stipend, for their pay. And there are employees of those parks. You're talking about play-by-play people, concession workers,
sure.
Coaches. I mean, there's all kinds of people. Then you've got sponsors that are paying for stuff. Now they might want their money back. And I mean, it's a huge kind of ecosystem around each of these. And there are so many minor league teams. So many.
Yeah. This is great because I didn't know anything about minor league baseball. I knew it existed. I didn't really understand it. Thank you for explaining it to me.
The one thing I've always appreciated a lot about baseball is baseball has its own minor league system that it largely funds, unlike football, which uses colleges.
Right.
It doesn't
right.
have a minor league system. And basketball, which uses colleges, but also now has this developmental league for sort of the wobbler kids who aren't maybe ready for the NBA. Baseball at least has a system that you can at 17 years old or 18 years old start working professionally yeah. within and work your way up and like to so famous players that kind of bypassed minor leagues almost not no one never does. Stacey's totally right, no one does entirely, but like Ken Griffey Jr. I think was 19 when he got called up to the majors. But he is, like she said, a generational talent.
Right,
it's a pretty rare thing. You usually spend some time matriculating in the minor leagues before you get pulled up.
Guys, I'm learning so much. This is fun.
Okay.
It's fun to learn. It's fun to learn, Stacey. I'm going to say it in my
voice. We talked about a lot today.
We
learned a lot.
We covered a whole bunch.
We covered a lot of ground.
And it really did.
And I'll add one other thing. The weird thing about minor leagues is this. It is one of the few areas where U.S. mirrors the European sporting model, where you have really young people brought into a system, which is much more common in France, in Spain, in Italy, in England than it is here. Although there it's applied to basketball and soccer primarily, it's really not to baseball. But it is a model that actually, and shutting down that lower level system has an effect on people, who are trying to get to the professional level. I mean, it sort of rules them out for a year.
Do they have baseball in France?
Yeah.
They do in Italy. I know it's fairly popular there.
I believe it's all France.
Oh, excusez-moi, mademoiselle.
Oh.
Stacey Joe.
All right, we gotta get out of here.
You got a little gator in there for a second.
Yeah. Yo, remember him? We gotta call
you
that.
Remember him?
We gotta call that old boy. Boy.
Oh, I miss that guy.
I know. He's good people. I'll shoot him a text. All right.
Okay, guys.
We gotta get out of here. More Cairo Nights after this,
good
everybody.
Good talking to you.
Thanks, Stacey.
Bye.
You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell. You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
Oh, Rachel Bell.
Oh, Aaron Mason.
I'll just say what the song said.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your reaction sounded like she just popped out of a trap door.
Yeah.
In
well,
the
that's
floor.
The magic of radio.
Smoke bomb. Rachel Bell.
Yeah.
That's who we're talking to.
Like,
if anyone here would, it'd be you.
It would. I would love to pop out of a smoking trap door.
Why not?
You know what? If I ever own my own home, I've always wanted to have a secret room, like where you
panic
go
room?
No, not a panic room. More like you push through the bookshelf, like a Scooby-Doo style room. That seems really cool.
I saw one just, I think it was today. They all blur together these days of ours. But somebody had a kitchen island, and the whole top of it slid back. And then what looked like some piece of wood on the end opened up into two doors, and there were stairs down into like a secret basement room. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
That is so cool.
Very James Bond.
But then who do you show it to, and who do you not show it
to? That's the thing. Are you on the list? Can you know?
Right.
Can you know about the secret?
And can you trust everyone you showed it to?
I mean, Oprah's
this
telling everybody
like
about
a
secret.
It sounds like a theme song to some 80s children's movie, what you guys are, like, what you're saying.
It's very Goonies.
Guilty.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about, Rich?
I like that moment of silence for that. Yes. We're talking about how to throw a party in the time of COVID, or should you even been having a party? So people are starting to get restless. We've been in quarantine for several months, and now it is summer. It's graduation season. People are having birthday parties, weddings, things like that. And so people are finally succumbing to actually having these parties. And so in the Wall Street Journal, they gave some examples of people who attempted to have safe parties but kind of failed. So the first example they give is this woman said, hey, we're going to have a graduation party, but don't worry, it's going to be safe. We're going to have tables in the backyard, and each one will be assigned to a family. So you're only sitting with your people. Each family brings their own cooler of drinks. She said people wouldn't need a bathroom break, or they could just go home, which I was like, okay,
what?
Doesn't go with the cooler part.
Nope.
But she said once the party started, it all fell apart. Everybody sat wherever they wanted. They drank each other's drinks out of the coolers. Everyone had to go to the bathroom. The teenagers were playing basketball together.
Oh my God.
So I think it's hard to make it go as planned. So I noticed over the weekend that Terry Holloman, a.k.a. T. Holla, father of a teenager and friend of the show. His oldest daughter graduated from high school, and so they had a party, and I wanted to know how he did it. So he said they have 4 acres of land, so they figured it would be easier to have an outdoor party.
We're going to have an outdoor event. People could be socially distant and remain relatively safe. We set up a bunch of tables, had them, of course, 6 feet apart. We only set up a couple chairs at each table. As far as like beverages, we had individual water bottles, individual sodas. Some of the cookies and cakes were pre-wrapped. Of course, every station had a hand sanitizer bottle there as well. And we actually rented a food truck. It kept everybody feeling relatively safe that their food was only being handled by people who were, you know, sanitized, wearing gloves and masks.
So the one thing that a lot of people are struggling with and craving right now, and they mentioned in this article too, was hugging. Did you guys try to refrain from hugging? You know, you come to a graduation party and that's everybody wants to hug the graduate. Did you keep people apart?
Oh, you want me to tell on myself right here on radio, Rachel? Goodness gracious. And you know the routine, and everybody out there knows the routine. When you see someone that you haven't seen in a while, the awkward, do you rub elbows? Do you fist bump? Do you turn around and bump butts or whatever it is that you do? So we had some awkward elbow to fist forearm bump shivers types going on here.
Did you get anybody RSVPing no and saying, I don't feel comfortable coming to a party yet?
My mom. My mom was like, I'm cool on my firstborn granddaughter's graduation. Thanks. See you later. You know, she has been dealing with some health issues. That's why. But then she came. She had a full mask. She looked like Doc in Back to the Future in a whole hazmat suit. But she came and she said hi, bye, and went on her way.
So he said they decided to have this party because all the things we've heard, you know, the high school kids didn't get to have a prom. They didn't have a graduation, and they're all getting ready to leave for college, and they feel like they're not going to get to see each other. And he said his daughter has been really upset the past couple months.
For a lot of people, it was their first time getting back out. My daughter's peer group, they've been together since they were in kindergarten. They had wanted to see this thing through all the way to the end with each other, and it was completely disrupted. And this was just everybody's, you know, sense of normalcy, getting back to something that was normal before they all go on to different areas of their lives. And so a lot of them were just very thankful that they had the opportunity to do this.
Just to put a bow on it, his daughter is going to play basketball at Seattle Pacific University. And he said it's happening as of now. Like, they're planning to move into the dorms. Huh. They're just going to play it by ear to see if the team plays. And they're being told they're giving all these instructions just to exercise at home and to play basketball by themselves on the court to practice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good party.
It does.
Honestly.
It does. I saw the pictures. It looked like people were pretty spaced out. Not always. I think when you get there, it's hard to do it. Every time I've met up with a friend who's invited me to go on a, quote, socially distanced walk, we stand right next to each other.
Yep. Yep.
And we don't wear masks, admittedly, because I think you feel like, oh, I'm with one person.
Right.
So I don't need to wear a mask. And I don't know how right or wrong that is.
And this person's really funny. So how could they possibly be carrying a virus? Listen, you hear that joke? This person's not infected.
Yeah, I've gotten really into the mask situation. It's almost a, I don't want to say deal breaker, but it's the kind of thing where, like, if I went to Terry's party and no one was wearing masks, like, that's a bad situation. It just is. Like,
yeah.
You just got to look at what's going on right now. And things are getting worse and worse. Masks, what's it like, 70%? I don't remember the exact numbers, but the science is there. And so when it's something that can help you connect or feel connected, even though you kind of really can't or at least aren't supposed to these days. But his mom shocked me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how serious this is.
Yeah.
You know, and she's been dealing with some health issues and might be in a group that's at higher risk. But the more and more we learn about this thing, the more items are added to the higher risk category.
Yeah.
And soon it's like having brown eyes is going to be on there. Like, it's just things that a lot of us deal with.
I want to be clear. I do wear a mask every time I go into any store.
Yeah,
and I'm very pro mask. I just have not been as good at policing myself of when I'm with a friend one-on-one.
Yeah. My girlfriend and I go on long walks like Rachel does, you know, these multi-mile jaunts around town, and if I'm out and I'm by myself and it's just her and I don't wear a mask.
Yeah, I wouldn't in that situation
either. But you have to keep it with you because you get in situations or you may have to where you can't make that wide berth or you're waiting in line outside something mm-hmm. to maybe pick up groceries. You know, so I always virtually every single bag like in my vehicle, I have like 10 masks.
You've
masks everywhere, including on my desk right now.
You're like a squirrel.
Yeah.
I think it's hard when you listen and, you know, it's these kids haven't seen each other. They're really upset. They're depressed. And like, it's really hard, I think, because you want to respect that. But also in the scheme of things, if you got sick, that's nothing compared to not seeing your friends for a few months. I mean, young people are getting sick. I think at parties. I think going back to college is going to be a big problem. Because when I was that age, I wouldn't have listened to all. I would have been one of those dumb kids in Florida.
Oh, me too.
In the pool with hundreds of people. Like, I think we're going to have a big swing up once school starts again in the fall.
Yeah. I think that's true.
They're already having problems at the frat houses and sorority houses at UW.
Yeah.
Big problems. Bye, Rach.
Thank you. Always leaving on a positive note. We're all going to die. Bye, guys.
Bye. We'll be back. We're Kyra Nights after this. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's Kyra Nights, Mason Mike. It's time for What's on Your Mind. I have something I would like to read. We didn't talk about it on the show tonight, but comedy legend Carl Reiner passed away today. He was 98 years old. Just if you're unfamiliar, just Google him, watch some stuff on YouTube. The guy had his hand in some of the funniest things that we've made in the last 80 years. I mean, he's been doing this for quite literally forever. Well, I saw a Twitter thread that had a story about Carl, and I wanted to share it. It's a little bit long, but it's a really great story. It's from someone named Matthew Rosenberg. He is apparently a comic artist or writer, Frank, and he is at Ashcan Press on Twitter. It's got 30,000 plus retweets at this point. So here it is. I have a Carl Reiner story that I hold very dear to me. I figured I'd share it today on the day of his passing because I hope it will bring some other people joy the same way it does me. Growing up, my dad and his twin brother fell in love with Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows. It's the show that made my dad fall in love with storytelling and comedy. They worshipped Caesar along with cast member slash writer Carl Reiner. Caesar, Reiner, and the other writers on the show, including Mel Brooks, Neil Simon, Woody Allen, all made my dad and uncle want to be writers, which they both ended up being. Growing up, my dad's choice of dinner on every birthday was beef stroganoff. Why did he eat beef stroganoff on every birthday for his whole life? Because of a joke on your show of shows. When Charlton Heston was a guest on the show, they did a Cold War spy sketch where Reiner was told to go into a restaurant and, quote, ask for beef stroganoff. So he sits down and the waitress comes over. Reiner says, I'm here for beef stroganoff. She leaves, and a short while later, Heston walks over to the table and asks Reiner, can I help you? And Reiner responds, I asked for beef stroganoff. And Heston pauses, and then in his deep voice deadpans, I am beef stroganoff. The joke made my dad laugh his whole life. Around 20 years ago, my dad had his yearly birthday call with his brother. Again, they're twins. My dad mentioned having beef stroganoff. My uncle asked why he always had that on his birthday. Confused, my dad just said, because of the sketch. Well, my uncle had no idea what he was talking about. It turns out he remembered the sketch clearly, but he was convinced Heston's name in it was Sauerbraten, not beef stroganoff. And they ended up arguing about this for years. My dad bought every DVD and VHS of your show of shows he could find. He watched every clip online and every documentary, but there didn't seem to be any surviving tape of that sketch. So jump ahead 10 years and Carl Reiner writes a new book. He announces he'll be signing and giving a talk in New York at the 92nd Street Y. My dad sees his chance. He buys tickets as fast as he can. My dad was desperate to ask him about the sketch in person, but knowing he may not get the chance, he also wrote up a letter to hand to Reiner in case there was no time to ask. And when it came time for the signing, my dad waited in line, and when he got in front of Reiner, he told the story of how his whole life he'd loved the show and the sketch and beef stroganoff, but then he got in the fight with his brother. Carl listened. When he got to the part about how they couldn't remember whether it was beef stroganoff or sauerbraten, he asked Carl point blank, which was it? Carl Reiner stared at my dad, laughed, and simply said, that was a long time ago. So my dad thanked him anyway, got his book signed, and then decided to hand him the letter he'd written too, just because he had said some nice things in it about how much he appreciated Reiner's work over the years. 2 months later, my dad's out for a bike ride. The phone rings. My mom answers. A man asks to speak to my father, and she tells him that he's out. The man says he'll try back another time, and she asks who it is, and he says, Carl Reiner, and hangs up. No number, no caller ID. Obviously, we are all in awe that he called, and we wait for him to call back. And we wait. And we wait. Finally, a week goes by, and the phone rings. My dad answers it excitedly like he'd answered every call in the past week. But this time, it's Carl Reiner again. He says he read the letter my dad gave him at the signing, and he found it so touching that he wanted to share it, quote, with the others. Then he puts the phone on speaker, and Carl Reiner is having dinner with Mel Brooks and Sid Caesar. They are calling my dad, to answer his questions about a sketch from 50 years ago. They all made some jokes and admit that they have no idea whether Charlton Heston was named beef stroganoff or sauerbraten in the sketch. But they all agree beef stroganoff is funnier, so they give the victory to my dad over my uncle. This was literally one of the best days of my father's entire life. His heroes called him up to chat and make jokes and thank him for caring. It meant the world to him, and it means as much to me now that they would do that. As a side note, a few years later, my dad went to the Museum of Television in New York and decided to watch some stuff from the archives. There, they had some episodes of your show of shows that aren't available anywhere else, so my dad sat down and watched them all. On the very last episode, they announced a special guest, Charlton Heston. My dad held his breath. The sketch begins just as my dad remembers it, and then Sid Caesar tells Carl Reiner, quote, go to this restaurant and ask for sauerbraten.
Oh, no.
So even your heroes get it wrong sometimes. But I love that my dad made the joke funnier. Thanks, Carl, for inspiring my dad to be a writer, and thanks for being so kind, generous, and warm. He tried to follow in your footsteps in all of those things, and I'm trying to follow in his. So that's it.
That's fantastic.
Isn't
Thank
that
you
wonderful?
For doing that. Yeah,
great,
that's wonderful.
That's such story. A cool story. Such a cool story. That's it for us, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. For Mike Lewis and Frank Shires, I'm Aaron Mason. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Danger, take a look all around.